It's time to go back in time.
So I think there's you can't pinpoint one reason why people hate John Cena. They're just sick of seeing him. They're sick of seeing him, and they resent the fact that he's been shoved down their throats for so long, which is what they have to try to avoid doing with Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is over. There's going to be people who start to boo him soon. I guarantee you, especially if the idea is to keep pushing him until he beats Brock for the title of WrestleMania, if that's the plan, or whoever he beats. There's a pretty good chance that Roman Reigns will end WrestleMania next year winning the championship. And I'm okay with that. But that means they're going to be pushing this guy hard for the next 8, 9, 10 months, and probably a lot longer than that. And if he wins the title, it's going to be worse. Because their idea is for him to be the next John Cena. So I guarantee you right now, you're going to get those people who start very loudly and noticeably booing Roman Reigns before long. Because that's just the thing to do now. When you perceive that the company is shoving somebody down your throat, you resent them for it. It's not like it was 20 years ago. People will just accept it because that's just how it is. Everyone now, they control the show. And they want what they want. They don't want what you want them to want. That's a mouthful.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
That clip that you heard there was from Sound Off episode 335, all the way back on July 5th, 2014. That was almost 3 years ago, and I thought it would be very appropriate to play here on the podcast the week after that opening segment we saw with Roman Reigns on Raw last Monday night. It's very interesting to see how things have evolved since then, isn't it? This is episode 490 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, April 9th, 2017. I am the Solid Monster back here in New York, back home from Orlando, vacation over. Had an unbelievable weekend. I'll talk a little bit about that in a second here, but I want to say thank you right off the bat to everybody who has taken advantage of our Audible offer. The new AJ Lee book is now officially out. I started telling you guys about it almost a month ago. And the book was on pre-order. If you use our Audible link, you could have pre-ordered the book, got it for free, whether you stuck with the 30-day trial or not. Even if you didn't get billed, you get to keep one free book. Well, now the book is available, and you can still take advantage of the same offer using our link. So if you go to audibletrial.com/solomonster, go through the sign-up process. You can sign up for a 30-day trial of the Audible service. You get to keep one free book of your choosing. It could be the AJ Lee book, Crazy is My Superpower. It could be any other book that's available for free. They have thousands to choose from, but the AJ one seems to be a very popular choice right now, given that it just came out, and there are some very interesting accounts in there of her time behind the scenes working for WWE, and even her upbringing. She had a very, maybe not the healthiest upbringing would be a good way to put it. I haven't read the book yet, but I've read some previews of it and some stories about it. So if you want your copy, and again, it's narrated by AJ herself, use our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. So take advantage of that. I also want to say thank you to everybody who made a PayPal donation this week coming off WrestleMania. All you guys who like the content that was put out there and who have stuck with the Sound Off for many, many years. I am forever grateful. I want to say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, The Florida Freebird Bryant Becerra, The Dark Serpent Derek Gibbs, The Chosen Son Andre Smith, Malicious Intent Michael Cuomo, Damn Straight Michael Dorsey, Mass Grave Micah Harshaw, Gabriel the San Diego Beer Snob Solis, I believe that's a nickname he came up with, Judge and Jury Justin Girardi, The Brooklyn Bombers Jamel and Isaiah Walker, The Prince of Pleasantville Anelio Crockett, Dream Chaser Chauncey Curry, Tony the Tiger Boylan, Lee Hired Gun Hieronics, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Gabriel Dirty Sanchez, again, not a name that, I may have come up with that name. I don't remember now. Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, Master Technician Michael Paez, Eitan the Executioner Zimmet, Matthew Moneybags Morocco, Metalhead Michael Babers, the Bakersfield Brawler Kevin Velato, the Prince of Pleasantville Emilio Crockett, Slice and Dice Stephen Chapa, Brian the Cleaver Carpenter, Rambo Ryan Hodge, Tommy the Best RA Stack, the German Assassin Trust, see, this is going to be tough now for me. Let me make sure I get this right. Trust has been a longtime fan here. Trust Sacabuana. Hopefully that's the proper way to pronounce that. You'll let me know. Million Dollar Matthew Yanez. And the Destroyer Curtis Coughlin. Capital Carnage Christian Reyes, who has a gaming channel on YouTube you can check out right now. CBars82 is his username on there. And Eric Chapman. So thank you for all of your support. Man, that's a lot of names to get through. I'm buying my yacht as we speak. Oh, wait, no, I'm not. Now, but thank you. I very much appreciate all of your support. Lots of content, as I said last weekend over WrestleMania weekend. My interviews for Fight TV, which are now available on the Sound Off YouTube channel. Pretty much most of them now have been uploaded. I want to thank them for the opportunity and also the opportunity to upload them to my channel. I still encourage you to download the free Fight TV app. That's F-I-T-E TV. They got a lot of good content up there. It is free. It is for Android and iOS devices. But if you just want to go straight to the Sound Off interviews that I did at WrestleCon, they're all up pretty much now on our YouTube channel. And I've gotten a ton of positive feedback from them. So I'm kind of overwhelmed by all of that, including to the now infamous Headbangers interview that I mentioned last week. A lot of people seem to be way more angry about it than I am. I just sort of, I don't know, brushed it off and, you know, went on with my business. It's really not a big deal to me. I seem to be quite a bit more busy than they were that day, so maybe I just wasn't thinking about it, but it did kind of go off the rails a little bit. If you've not seen it, the full thing is up on my channel. There are cameos by some former WWE stars in there, which I thought was kind of cool, so you could check that out. Also, my sit-down with Mean Gene Okerlund is up as well. I also did a podcast in studio with Noah and Brian, a bonus show that was exclusive to the SE Scoops mobile app with myself and Noah talking our favorite WrestleMania matches. So there's a lot of stuff that I did last week, and not to mention the 90-minute WrestleMania review. That full recap is up on YouTube as a sound-off extra, so lots and lots of content. Go check it all out when you are done here listening to this brand new podcast. Speaking of WrestleMania, final Twitter poll results for WrestleMania 33. They are in. Over 5,400 votes, which may be an all-time record for these polls that I've done. 82% of you voted thumbs up. 18% of you voted thumbs down. And you would never know it based on those poll results, but there was a lot of divided opinion about this WrestleMania, even though that is an overwhelmingly positive reaction. Some people just absolutely hated the show, whether it was just too long or too boring or just a lot of weird match outcomes or whatever it may have been. And then other people thought it was the best WrestleMania in years. I personally gave it a 7 out of 10. I thought it was a good show overall. I enjoyed more on it than I hated. I have since gone back and watched the Undertaker match on the network. Very cool to hear Jim Ross back on commentary doing his thing. And I can't say that I cried the way that some people were crying in the crowd when I was at the stadium. And there were a lot of people, male and female, who were kind of losing it there at the end with The Undertaker. Because, again, it was a very... Look, if you've been a wrestling fan for any length of time, you don't even have to be like a big Undertaker fan. I mean, it's a pretty heavy thing. I mean, and the way that they did that whole thing at the end of that match, I thought was very well done. And, you know, how could you not be affected in some way or think, man, this is really the end of an era in this company? You know, it really did feel like the end. It felt like a changing of the guard, even though he's been part-time now for so many years, but it was a big deal to a lot of people. I can't say I was sitting there, you know, crying in the stadium or anything like that, but I will say, you know, when I watched it back on TV, it did get to me more than it even did in the stadium. It really did. I mean, it was tough to watch. But it was a great moment. It'll go down as an all-time memorable, you know, WrestleMania moment. And to be there for that live was very cool. Even the John Cena, Nikki Bella stuff, you know, I thought the match was nothing special at all. But the post-match stuff I thought was well done. And it got them exactly what they were looking for. They got a ton of publicity out of it. I mean, I had to go to the optometrist or whatever. I had a pair of eyeglasses that I wear sometimes, you know, to watch television or whatever. So I had to go get the lenses changed out. By the way, who knew, right, that eyeglass lenses would be so expensive? I mean, my God. So I'm sitting there and I'm waiting, and the doctor, she comes out. And I don't know, we were on the subject. I just come back from Orlando. I was telling them about my trip, and I went to WrestleMania and all that kind of stuff. And she kind of gets into the conversation, and she's not a wrestling fan at all, but she mentions John Cena. Did you know that John Cena got engaged? So, like, people know about this. It's obvious why they did this. I'm sure, again, the proposal was weeks and weeks and weeks, if not months ago, and then they just saved it for this one moment. And for what it was, I thought it was well done. AJ and Shane had a great match. The Hardys return, I thought, was awesome. If that stadium had a roof on it, it would have been blown off when those guys came out. Goldberg and Lesnar killed it for the 5 minutes they were out there. That's about as long as it should have gone. And it was nonstop action from start to finish. And I know people were like, yeah, but it was just a bunch of finishers. Like, who cares? I don't really understand what people's expectations were for that match. Go back to what I said in November when I was talking about the match at Survivor Series, and the main reason I was so upset and I was so disappointed by what they did. I was going into that thing wanting a Smash Mouth fight between those two guys just going out there and beating the piss out of each other. Well, guess what? That's what we got here. I didn't want to see them go in there and exchange wrist locks. You know what I mean? Like, give me a break. I mean, what expectations did you have about this match? Brock Lesnar, I've long since given up on Brock Lesnar kind of reverting back to the Brock of old and busting out some moves other than suplexes. He goes out there, he suplexes people. That's what he does. I thought that leapfrog, which he kind of hit his leg on Goldberg's head. It was kind of botched, but not really. But that was amazing. I mean, this guy is a freak of nature. You know, that vertical leap, jumping over Goldberg when Goldberg hit the turnbuckle. You know, the spear through the barricade. I mean, they were going balls to the wall for the 5 minutes that they were out there. It was nonstop action. And I don't doubt that one of their goals, and Goldberg, I think, he even said it on Monday. He's like, we've erased the memory of that, you know, horrible match from WrestleMania 20. If that was one of their goals, mission accomplished. I was starting to wonder myself what kind of reaction these guys were going to get going out there. Because Goldberg was already kind of getting some boos. You know, both guys are part-time. Are the fans going to be smart and they're going to turn on them? But they didn't give him a chance. They just went out there and they had a brawl for 5 minutes, and the people went nuts for it from start to finish. And they had a great near fall in there when Goldberg hit the jackhammer and Brock kicked out. I loved that. I was hoping they would do something like that. And then everybody counting along with the suplexes. You'll notice now, whenever you have something like that on television, everybody just chants 10, 10, 10. That's the new thing now, and it ain't going away. But for Brock, they were counting 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, for the suplexes until they finally hit number 10. And people were just losing their minds. I mean, Brock was like the biggest babyface in the world out there. He was the babyface conqueror. And then 1F5, and that was it. And I could tell you that looking around, nobody seemed disappointed by that match. So, you know, for me to sit here and say it was either the best or one of the best matches on the show, I think you just have to look at it as not every match is meant to be the same. Yeah, it wasn't long. It wasn't, you know, technically sound. It wasn't supposed to be. It was exactly what it had to be, and I loved every second of it. I thought it was great. I would not change a thing. So, a good show, much better than last year. Although, again, like I said in my review, I think that's setting the bar kind of low. But much better than last year, just way too long. That's really my biggest criticism. And maybe you, watching at home, if you didn't go to WrestleMania, feel differently about it than I do, having to sit there from 5 o'clock to 12:15 a.m. or whatever it was. And thank God we at least had cloud cover in Florida, because if the sun was out, I would be a tomato right now in the burn unit at some hospital down there in Orlando getting skin grafts. So thankfully that was not really an issue. But it's just so long. You know, you cannot do a 7-hour show. I'm sorry. That's just insanity. The Bray Wyatt-Randy Orton match, I want to just talk about this. That was the biggest disappointment of the night. Just a boring match with the wrong outcome. WrestleMania really is not Bray Wyatt's show. I mean, that much is obvious, okay? He loses to John Cena at WrestleMania 30, another match where I really still think he should have won. He loses to The Undertaker at WrestleMania 31. Not that there's any shame in losing to The Undertaker at WrestleMania, but there were people even then who were making arguments about how, you know, Bray should get a win, right? Now that the streak has been broken, Bray should get a big win. He didn't. He doesn't even have a match at WrestleMania 32, but he gets his ass kicked by The Rock. And then he loses the championship to Randy Orton at WrestleMania 33. So that's good for a cool 0-3 record at WrestleMania. And Jay in our Facebook group called him the Reverse Undertaker, which I think there's some real validity to that. You can call him Bizarro Taker. That's what Bray Wyatt has become. Now, the thing is, you can look at it from a different perspective too, right? He's been on four straight WrestleManias working with John Cena, The Undertaker, The Rock, and Randy Orton. You know what? That's not bad company to be in. Guys would kill to work with big names like that at WrestleMania. So he's got that going for him. I can't sit here and tell you the guy's been buried 6 feet under or anything like that, but, you know, Jay calls him the Reverse Undertaker. The frustrating thing is that Bray Wyatt and whatever mystique he has or had is really the closest thing to an Undertaker-type character that we have right now. And Undertaker never lost like this, right? I mean, they would have these giants that they would bring in for him to feud with, like Giant Gonzalez and Kamala and people like that. But he wasn't losing like this. That's part of what gave him that mystique. And it's hard to take this guy seriously when he cuts these creepy promos and then fails to deliver the goods. And now it looks like they're keeping this feud going based on what we saw on SmackDown. And I am intrigued to see what this House of Horrors match is that they're teasing for the next pay-per-view. I want to see what type of match it is first before I get too excited about it. But I am not at all excited about the idea of this feud continuing. I am so over this already. I'm trying to think of the last time I was actually really into a storyline and just soured on it this quickly. But that was easily the weakest part of SmackDown this week and the biggest disappointment of WrestleMania to me. I just find the whole thing incredibly boring. I'm just ready for it to be over. This was the most newsworthy week, I think it's safe to say, in WWE, probably in many years. So just to recap all of the big things that happened this past week, we had two world title changes at WrestleMania, plus the apparent retirement of The Undertaker. Finally, people have been talking about this for years, but now it looks like it's the real deal. We had the return of the Hardys to WWE. We had the return of Jim Ross, who has signed a 2-year deal with the company. We have the return of Drew McIntyre, which was quite the surprise to see him pop up there at NXT TakeOver. He will be a big star, one of the top stars on the NXT brand going forward. We have the return of Finn Balor to WWE television. And finally, the main roster arrival of Shinsuke Nakamura. We also have the main roster debut of The Revival on Raw. Kurt Angle was named as the new Raw General Manager by Vince McMahon. We had the announcement by Vince of this superstar shakeup that they're doing this week. That's what they're calling it. It's not a draft. It's a superstar shakeup. Sounds like something that'll go down as one of the horrible new dance moves of 2017. Like the Macarena. Or the, what was the other one? The Dougie? Is that what it was? Teach Me How to Dougie, I think it was, right? I don't know. Anyway. I'm always treading on shaky ground here when I start talking about, you know, dance moves and pop music references, so I apologize. So let's talk about this superstar shakeup shit, shall we? We don't know a whole lot about this. We don't know if this is a full draft lottery. I assume not, because if it was, they would just call it a draft, and they are going out of their way not to call it a draft. Is it just a series of trades between the two brands? You know, that's one thing we really have not seen yet. We're not even a year into this brand split, but one of the things we've seen basically none of are trades between the two commissioners, the two general managers. And this seems like a case where this is probably more, you know, trading back and forth than anything else. You know, is NXT involved? Are they involved in this whole thing? Are there going to be any free agent signings as well? I would think there's a good chance of it. We just don't know because they haven't told us how any of this is going to work. What we do know, and I don't even know that this has been announced by WWE, but I saw sites like PW Insider report that, you know, the roster's been informed that they have to be at Raw and SmackDown both days. And so apparently it's going to be a two-day event. This is not just going to be a Raw thing on Monday. It's going to happen on Raw Monday. It's going to bleed into SmackDown on Tuesday. So there's going to be some moves here. I mean, this is not like a one or two move kind of thing. There's going to be some big moves taking place. So what moves are there to be made? There's been a lot of rumors. There's been a lot of reports about guys moving, Roman Reigns moving, and now the reports are he's not going to move, and is AJ Styles going to get moved to Raw? It sounds like there's a pretty good chance of it. Here are the moves that I would make, right? And I admit I haven't had as much time to really think about this as I would have liked because I've been just so freaking busy this week. But I took a few hours yesterday to just sit here, look at the rosters, look at the layout of everything, and just come up with some moves that I think would at least, in the short run, would freshen things up on both shows. Now, with Raw, here's the deal with Monday Night Raw. Raw already has a very strong core of big names, a lot stronger than SmackDown does. I think we can agree on that, right? SmackDown needs a bigger boost than Raw does in that department. So I would keep Brock Lesnar's the champion, so he's not going anywhere. I would keep Brock Lesnar, I would keep Roman Reigns, I would keep Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman and Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens, all of them I would keep on Raw as the key guys. What I would do is I would move Finn Balor over to SmackDown. Finn Balor just came back. He made his big return on Raw Monday night. I would move him over to SmackDown, right? And I look, none of this even trade stuff where, well, you move Balor, you've got to move someone of equal value. You know, SmackDown loses AJ Styles. First of all, there is no such thing as an even trade for AJ Styles. Okay, in terms of star power, I guess Roman Reigns would be it. But again, I would keep Roman on Raw. And I would keep AJ Styles on SmackDown. I would not move AJ Styles. I would move Balor over. Now, don't forget, you know, Raw just got Kurt Angle installed as its new GM. And you figure Kurt's going to probably wrestle a couple of matches between now and next year's WrestleMania. Plus, Raw got the Hardys. They got the Revival. So, Raw's doing okay. Even if SmackDown kind of gets a few more names than Raw does this week, Raw's still in pretty good shape in terms of star power. Now, who I would move to Raw to freshen things up a bit from the SmackDown brand are Miz and Maryse. And storyline-wise, if the GMs are trading people, Daniel Bryan has every reason to want Miz off his show. If this really is a matter of trading guys, this is Daniel Bryan's big moment, right? This is the moment that he's been waiting for to get the Miz off of SmackDown. They have been feuding for months. They don't like each other. Bryan has gone on TV and said, I don't think you're a good wrestler. So why then in storyline would he want to keep this guy on SmackDown? Miz just lost to John Cena at WrestleMania. All right. I do think he would make a great foil for Nakamura in Nakamura's first feud on SmackDown, but I think they should both go to Raw. I would move Miz and Maryse over to the Raw brand, and I would also move Luke Harper over to Raw. I've been kind of disappointed in their lack of really doing much of anything with Luke Harper, but you could just chalk it up maybe to, well, they were heading into WrestleMania, and so we had our WrestleMania plan set. We didn't really have anything for Harper. Post-WrestleMania, we'll do something with the guy. But if he really is broken away from the Wyatt family, I'm kind of over the whole, like, Harper against Bray, and I sure as hell don't need to see a Luke Harper against Eric Rowan feud. I'm looking at the lay of the land on SmackDown, and I don't know. I'm just thinking somebody like Harper could really benefit, I think, from a change of scenery. So I would move Harper over to Raw, and I would debut Shelton Benjamin on Raw as well. Originally, he was earmarked for SmackDown before he got hurt. They even started airing vignettes on TV hyping his return, and then they just suddenly stopped. With all the other moves that I'm making that I'm going to be talking about here, I think SmackDown for a two-hour show is going to be in pretty good shape without him. So I would put Shelton on Raw. Maybe feud him with Kevin Owens for the U.S. title. So those are the Raw moves that I would make in terms of like the top talent. I mean, there are other moves I'm going to get into here with the women and the tag teams. SmackDown Live, I mentioned Finn Balor. I would shift him over to SmackDown. One of the reasons that I would do that, and one of the ideas that I'm kind of excited about, is I would also want to move Anderson and Gallows over to SmackDown. So all of a sudden, you've got AJ Styles, Finn Balor, and The Club all on the same brand. And I still think that you could do something, and I know not everybody is hip to what, you know, the Bullet Club and stuff that happened in New Japan, but it wouldn't be very difficult for the announcers to give us some of the backstory. And I think that, you know, these guys all would work very well together. And look, you want to put your own WWE spin on it, you don't even have to focus so much on the history. You could still take either Styles or Balor and align them with Anderson and Gallows, and maybe that would give Anderson and Gallows... That's easy for me to say. I promise you, I haven't been drinking. I haven't had a drink since Orlando. Gallows, there we go. Anderson and Gallows. It might actually give them some of their mojo back that they kind of lost, I think, when they split them away from AJ and they were de-emphasized for so long. It might do them some good to hook them back up with one of the top baby faces or heels. It depends which way you want Balor and Styles to go. I'm almost more intrigued by Styles being the babyface and Balor, like, you know, the demon Balor kind of going heel. Just because I think it would be kind of interesting to see Balor doing the heel thing like he was doing in New Japan. We haven't seen him do it yet in WWE. And AJ is on the cusp of being a babyface again anyway. These people are so badly wanting to cheer this guy. They cheer him anyway every single week. And what we saw AJ doing on SmackDown this past week, shaking hands with Shane McMahon, you've earned my respect, walking away, it sure seems to me like they're going in more of a babyface direction with him anyway. So maybe that would be the alignment that I would want to go with, is I would have him as the babyface, Balor as the heel, hooked up with Anderson and Gallows, and I would build to that as a match at SummerSlam. I mean, I've already got two big matches in mind for Styles between now and WrestleMania. I'd love to see them build to a SummerSlam match and an extended feud with him against Balor and The Club, and eventually build to an AJ Nakamura match for WrestleMania next year, whether it's for the championship or not for the championship. So those are the two big matches between now and next April, I guess, that I would like to see AJ Styles in. And there are other people you can, you know, link him up with in between. So Balor, I mentioned, Anderson and Gallows, I'd shift over to SmackDown. The New Day. I think the New Day is in desperate need of some fresh opponents and just, I don't know, a new coat of paint, new settings, new environment. And I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think, what would the New Day's first big feud or first big program would be? I guess, you know, maybe with the Usos, they're the tag team champions. New Day and Anderson and Gallows, we've already seen that before. I know that, but... You know, I don't know. I just feel like New Day's been on Raw for so long, they probably should either be broken up or they should be shifted as a package deal to SmackDown. And that's interesting, you know, the potential to split them up. You know, why kill what works? I'm sure they're still making a lot of merch money off them and all that. But I don't know. I still think, not that Kofi's not a talented guy, but I still think there's value in doing something with Big E. I still think there's something there with that guy as a singles, but... Probably for now, the best thing to do would be to keep New Day together, but I would move them over to SmackDown, and I would also move Sami Zayn over to SmackDown, get him away from Kevin Owens. I'm kind of shocked they didn't do that already. They've kept those two on the same brand for so long. Sami has more to gain by being moved over than Owens does, so I would move Sami Zayn over to SmackDown. Rusev, when he's back from his shoulder injury, him and Lana. Again, you talk about massively underutilized and just underappreciated. Rusev, there's so much potential with him, even as a babyface, I think. But whatever role you want to put him in, I am more often than not so entertained by this guy. Maybe not all of his matches all the time, depending on who he's in the ring with. But there's so much more they could be doing with this guy. And I've heard all the stories about him having heat and being in the doghouse. There was a former writer who said, oh, he's got heat of some kind. I don't give a shit. You know what I mean? Like, who cares? When he comes back, it's a chance for a fresh start, a new brand, new opponents. He could be a solid, like, upper mid-card guy on that brand. Like I said, very entertaining. I want to see them do more with Rusev and Lana. Hey, you know, Lana's not bad to look at. I know she's also been training as a wrestler. I don't know how far along in that she is. I don't need to see Lana wrestling. They have enough female talent. But, you know, seeing her on TV is always fun. As far as tag teams, just to recap the tag team stuff, on Raw, I'm keeping the Hardys where they are and the Revival. They still have Enzo and Cass, Cesaro and Sheamus. There is one more big move I would make. I would shift one big team from SmackDown to Raw, and that is American Alpha. Jason Jordan and Chad Gable, I would like to see them on Raw. Especially now with Kurt Angle as the new general manager, I think there's the opportunity there for him to be something of a mentor to those two. And, I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, after watching Angle and Enzo on TV last week, the comedy potential with Kurt Angle and Chad Gable is just too good to resist, you know, moving them to Raw. So I would move them over to Raw. In terms of the women, in looking at the rosters on WWE.com, Raw has about a 2-3 woman advantage over SmackDown right now. Even if those two or three women do include Paige, who may never come back, and Summer Rae, who hasn't been on television in months. So that means that SmackDown needs some ladies. And that has to include at least one big name. Bayley is the champion, so I would not move her. But I think because we've already seen so much of that triangle with Bayley and Sasha and Charlotte, you gotta move at least one of them. And I think the one you move is Charlotte. She's already won the Raw title, what, 5 times in the last, it feels like, 2 months? It's a little longer than that, but I'm sure she'll win plenty of championships on SmackDown as well. But that, I think, is the best place for her right now. I would keep Sasha and Bayley together because I do like the idea of having Sasha turn on Bayley and doing a singles match at some point, maybe SummerSlam. I do think heel Sasha is the direction to go in. I would move Charlotte to SmackDown, and I would move either Alexa Bliss or Natalya over to Raw. And I'm a bigger, you know, I'm a bigger Alexa Bliss fan, so I'd probably move Alexa. She's lost her last 2 or 3 matches, and I don't know what you do with her now because seemingly they've moved on from her as a championship contender on SmackDown. So I would move her to Raw. I would move Mickie James over to Raw as well. I would also send Dana Brooke back down to NXT. And from NXT, speaking of, is NXT going to be part of this whole thing? I don't know if they are or not, but I would move Peyton Royce and Billy Kay as a package deal from NXT to SmackDown. They ain't beating Asuka anytime soon. They're pretty good. I'm more of a Peyton fan than I am a Billy fan, but I do like them together. So I would shift them up to the SmackDown brand. So the Raw Women's Division would have Bayley, Sasha, Emma, Summer, when she comes back, Alexa, Alicia Fox, Paige, and Nia Jax. And SmackDown would have Naomi, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, Nikki Bella, Carmella, Natalya, and then Peyton Royce and Billy Kay rounding out that crew. Eva Marie is out the door in a few months, so she doesn't really factor into any of this. So I guess in this scenario, Raw would still have a one-woman advantage, but so long as Paige is on the sidelines, it's pretty much even then at 8 women per brand. So that's the way I would do that. So just to recap all of this, Raw in my scenario would get Miz and Maryse, Luke Harper, Shelton Benjamin, Alexa Bliss, Mickie James, and American Alpha. SmackDown picks up Finn Balor, Gallows and Anderson, New Day, Sami Zayn, Rusev and Lana, Charlotte, and Peyton Royce and Billy Kay. That's in addition to Nakamura, who already debuted last week. Like I said, SmackDown, I think, needs more of a pickup than Raw does. And I think this would really, you know, put some new juice back into that brand, at least in the short term. And also 2 NXT moves. I mentioned one of them already. I think Dana Brooke back down to NXT. But I would get the Bruiserweight, Pete Dunne, on NXT as quickly as possible. I think that guy needs to be a top heel on that brand. I think they got to keep that feud going with William Regal. I was going to earmark him for SmackDown originally, but the more I think about it, NXT I think could really use him a lot more than SmackDown could right now. Plus, it keeps him open to do stuff with the other UK talent, whether that's their own show on the network, whether that's UK title defenses on NXT from Tyler Bate. He can't do that if you put him on Raw or SmackDown, but if you move him to NXT, he could still do all that other stuff. But I want to see more Pete Dunne on TV. I've become a big Pete Dunne fan. I think there's a lot of potential with that guy, and not just as a cruiserweight or anything like that. He's the real deal, and so I'd like to see him on NXT television a lot more real soon. So those are my moves in the Superstar Shakeup. Again, with the 3 hours I had yesterday to really think about this. I wish I had more time. So you guys can let me know what your moves might be. I know everybody's been having fun trying to figure out, you know, who goes where. And we'll find out this week. I think the two rosters are going to look quite a bit different when I do the podcast next weekend. Alberto El Patron. Let's talk about this guy. He went on a drunken Periscope rant Thursday night in Times Square. Him and Paige were in New York. Here's the Cliff Notes version. Remember how he claimed that he and Paige were getting married a few weeks ago? Well, that never happened. Now they're supposedly getting married in June. Maybe this will turn into a running joke where every 3 months he claims they're getting married, but they never actually do. He did at least admit before all of this that he was a little drunk. So he did say, I've been drinking. So at least he was honest. That it was pretty obvious watching this thing. He thanked everybody for supporting him. And then he said that he doesn't give a fuck if you support him or not. But thank you to those who do. Little contradictory statements there. Without calling him out by name, he basically called Triple H a pussy multiple times. Referred to his big nose, called him a big nose pussy. So we know exactly who he's referring to. By the way, his soon-to-be wife still works for WWE. So that's really smart. That's really smart of him to do. Then again, he seems to think that WWE had something to do with Paige's nudes leaking. So we're not exactly dealing with the brightest bulb in the box here. He says Paige is not coming back to WWE because she is pregnant with a little patron. But then he laughed after he said it, so he was joking. At least I think he was joking. I don't really know what is real and what's not with these two anymore. Then he talks about how close they are to Stanford and how that company is full of pussies. Mind you, Paige is completely embarrassed throughout this entire thing. Multiple times she tries to take the phone away from him. She tries to change the subject. And he just won't have any of it. He was just having way too much fun. Just this whole thing was just a train wreck. Like, you can't look away, but it was just a complete train wreck. And, you know, for a guy who hates WWE so much and works for Impact now, he sure does love to talk about WWE a lot, doesn't he? You ever notice that? I thought for sure we were going to witness the first ever Periscope murder. When he mentioned they were in Times Square, and he panned around to show us that he was in Times Square. I'm like, yep, that's Times Square. And for those of you who have never been to Times Square or New York City before, in Times Square, it's a giant nuisance. Like, it's gotten completely out of control. But they have these people who are dressed up in these cartoon character costumes. So they're dressed up as Disney characters, you know, Woody and Buzz Lightyear from Toy Story and Spider-Man and the Minions or whatever the fuck those little things with the glasses are. They're all over the place. They're all over Times Square to the point where now the city had to put lines down on the ground and technically they're not allowed to get out of their box. Like, they can't pass the line because they were harassing people. They tell, oh, you want to take pictures? And of course all the tourists are like, oh yeah, sure, we'll take pictures. And then when they do, they put their hand out and they want payment. They're like, all right, now pay me. And it just became a nuisance. And some of them were like sexually harassing women. It's awful. So I'm watching this and I'm thinking to myself, oh man, like this guy's going to bump into a Ninja Turtle because they have people who are dressed up in Ninja Turtle costumes as well. And you know, we all know the history of Alberto and the Ninja Turtle. And I'm thinking, man, he is going to murder this turtle right here on Periscope. He's already tried to kill one. There's three other Ninja Turtles. You know, it's not just Raphael. You got Leonardo, you got Donatello, you got Michelangelo, you got Splinter, you got Shredder, you got Bebop, you got Rocksteady, you've got April O'Neil, you've got Casey Jones, you've got Baxter Stockman, you've got all these different characters. And I mean, I'm not trying to make it sound like I used to be a Ninja Turtles fan when I was a kid, but you can kind of tell I was. But man, it's like I'm watching this, like I'm looking in the background. Where's the turtle? The slightest thing, I just expect to set this guy off. I don't know if you get the same feeling when you watch this guy. He comes across as very, he's like a charming guy and he's always smiling. And even in this video with Paige, like he's constantly kissing her and he's looking in the camera and giving the wink like the Del Rio character used to do the wink on television. But there's something unnerving about this guy. I don't know if it's all the stories about the fights that he's gotten into. It just seems like he's got a short fuse. I don't know him. I've never met him. Maybe he's a perfectly nice guy and he only gets crazy when he gets drunk. I don't know. But it sure sounds like he's got a short fuse. And it just feels like there's something bubbling underneath. Like, this is just a bad situation. And I just have this feeling like something bad's going to happen at some point. But thankfully, no turtles were harmed in the filming of it. Monday Night Raw. Let's talk about Raw. Live from Orlando, Florida this past Monday night at the Amway Center. I was there. Raw Twitter poll. Almost 3,000 votes. 91% thumbs up. 9% thumbs down. This was the best Raw of the year. Just alone for the news that Stephanie McMahon is gone for the foreseeable future. Thank you, Seth Rollins. Actually, thank you, Triple H. What am I talking about? Fuck Seth Rollins. Thank you, Triple H. He's the one who put his wife through a table at WrestleMania. And Vince came out and said, you're not going to see Stephanie for a while. And so, thank you, Based H. We won't have to put up with her for at least a few weeks. It was certainly a newsworthy show. Like I said, I was there live in the building. So, I can tell you, however loud those boos for Roman Reigns came across on television, and I don't know if they fiddled with the crowd volume, if they muted some of the reaction or not, it was 10 times worse in the building in terms of just this hatred. It just showered in hatred. He was the most despised man in America for those 10 minutes that he was out there. And all I could think is, if only they did with him what they did with Bret Hart after WrestleMania 13, right? Bret got a big win over Steve Austin, but he ended up turning heel on the fans. Reigns here got a big win over The Undertaker, and he could have come out here with that reaction and just told the fans, you know, you hate me because you ain't me, and just drop the mic and walk out. I think people would have thrown garbage at him. I mean, that's how much, you know, some of these people really just hated this guy's guts. As it was, I loved the entire segment. I was bewildered by it when it was over, but I thought, man, I don't know what I just saw, but that was awesome. That was the best Roman Reigns promo I've ever seen. I've not seen that type of just visceral hatred for one man in a very long time. And I'd say the key is in the follow-up, right? Does he walk around with that same chip on his shoulder? Because he certainly felt heelish. Not that I think they're turning him, but he kind of felt that way here. Do they keep that going? You know, he comes out every week, this is my yard now, and just, you know, just to fuck with people? Or does he just go back to being the same Roman Reigns he was before his whole feud started with The Undertaker? I think we all know the answer to that question. And it's a real shame, because there's a great heel buried in there somewhere, just dying to come out, dying to go after the fans. But they just won't do it. And do you know how I know they won't do it? Because you guys sent me tweet after tweet after tweet during that show, talking about how on commentary, Michael Cole was talking about how the fans are here to have fun, and how they boo who they normally cheer, and they cheer those who they normally boo. There is nothing more insulting to the audience than when the Irish madman forces his announcers to spout this nonsensical bullshit every time the audience reacts in a way that they don't want them to. They boo those they normally cheer. Oh, really? I must have missed that string of Raw shows where the fans threw goddamn rose petals at Roman's feet as he walked to the ring. Thank God I was there in the crowd. I didn't have to listen to that garbage. But they chanted everything at the sun under this, you know, at this guy. Go away, you suck. Delete, delete, delete. Fuck you, Roman. Shut the fuck up. Every time he would lift the mic to his lips, I've never seen anything like it. 10 straight minutes of this. This was fantastic. The Hardy Boys, who made their big return at WrestleMania the night before, they are the new Raw Tag Team Champions. They beat Gallows and Anderson after Jeff hit the Swanton Bomb, and I believe Matt got the pin on Gallows. Now, the other big question that people have been asking is, are they going to use the broken gimmick? Because it's a little weird so far. They're using hints of it, right? Matt still has the wild hair. Some of the things he says, he's throwing his hand up, delete, delete, delete. Like, they're still doing... Jeff's really not doing anything. There's no hint of Brother Nero or anything. He's just Jeff Hardy. It's really all Matt. And he's showing a few hints of it, but by and large, they're just Matt and Jeff Hardy so far. Now, it's only been 1 week, and we know that there's still some legal hurdles to overcome. You know, Anthem has threatened to sue, and they're claiming that it's their trademark or copyright or whatever. And we'll see how it all shakes out. Matt on Twitter, who had changed his Twitter handle to hashtag delete Matt Hardy, used to be broken, now he's back to being broken. But he posted this, and this may be his explanation for how and why he's just Matt Hardy now. He said, "The sheer nirvana of coming home to that deafening ovation at WrestleMania seems to have contained my condition, if it can be contained." So it seems like he's leaving the door open. He's not saying he'll never be broken again, but it's kind of an explanation for why they really weren't using the gimmick this past week. And then he posted another tweet later on saying, hashtag broken brilliance. Instantaneous results are not always possible. Most worthwhile endeavors are garnered in time. Patience is paramount. And so that tells me that he thinks that in due time, they will legally be able to go back to doing the broken stuff. So if you're upset that he's not using it, I'm kind of bummed. I'm happy to see them both. I'm not, you know, angry about it or anything. I understand why. I would just say be patient, because it sure sounds like they'll probably be broken again sometime in the not-too-distant future. In fact, what I would do, I would keep the belts on them until they're legally cleared to use it, and then maybe have them lose the belts, and Matt falls into like a Great Depression or something. There has to be some kind of storyline explanation for why they become broken. It has to be explained to the WWE audience, and you're not going to show old TNA clips. So they're going to have to come up with their own story. They're going to have to come up with their own explanation for it. Especially if Jeff then becomes broken. It's like, why would they, right? Maybe, again, maybe they lose the championships and they just fall into a funk. Maybe Matt hits his head the way that, you know, Doc Brown did in Back to the Future when he invented the flux capacitor. I mean, you can come up with any wacky explanation for it that you want to. I just hope at some point we get to see it. Because I think it would be very entertaining. But there's no denying that the popularity of these two guys and how big of a deal it is to have them back in WWE, and how just unbelievably stupid it was for Anthem to let these two guys go, especially when they had verbally agreed to stay and they wanted to stay. They had every reason to stay. They had a good deal going and their family was involved and all that. And obviously that did not happen, but you look, I mean, look, WWE has a 3-minute clip on their YouTube channel from WrestleMania of them making their entrance. In less than a week, it already had over 10 million views. That is incredible. Kurt Angle's return as the Raw General Manager only had 3 million by comparison. These guys had 10 million views for that 1 3-minute clip of their return. I mean, it far exceeded any of the other videos or clips that they had put up from WrestleMania weekend. And interestingly enough, I decided to go ahead and check and see what the most watched videos of all time were on WWE's YouTube channel. I was like, oh, I'm just curious. Let me just check and see. Do you believe that 2 of the top 10 spots of most watched videos in WWE's YouTube history are occupied by the Great Khali? One is his debut, where he attacked The Undertaker, and the other is the Battle Royal, where he won the World Heavyweight Championship on SmackDown. Most watched of all time. 2 of the top 10 are the Great Khali. Don't tell Batista. He would be disgusted by that. Isn't that the classic comment, Batista, when he was asked about the Great Khali winning the world title? He said he vomited, or he wanted to vomit, or something like that. One other observation here, there was a cruiserweight match, Neville and Mustafa Ali, and there was some stuff that happened here during this match. I watched, in between the in the commercial break between the two segments before the cruiserweight match, I watched an entire crew of people rush the ring to tape the ropes purple. it's so comically unnecessary. Like, I could appreciate them wanting to, in some way, distinguish the cruiserweight stuff from everything else on the show, but just the idea that you have this entire team of people who have like 2 minutes to get into the ring, and they have to tape all the ropes purple, and when it's over, they rip the tape off. It's just so stupid. It's just so dumb. And for the people who have asked, it is tape over the ropes, and the logos that you see on the mat, I do believe that they are decals. I don't believe that it is any sort of spotlight. Somebody asked me about that. Because if it was a spotlight, when the referee or the guys would go over it, you would see it on them, and you don't. So I'm pretty sure it's a special canvas with decals on it. But it's just so funny. Like, it's like a whole crew of like 10 people just rushing to tape the ropes. It's like, why? Why are you even bothering? But we had a cruiserweight match, non-title, Neville and Mustafa Ali, and it turned into a really good match. Unfortunately, Beach Ball Mania took over, and the fans were largely distracted for most of the match, as I'm sure you could tell watching on TV. I don't know if the announcers acknowledged it. I almost feel like they had no choice to. I actually got hit in the head by a beach ball at one point. These things were multiplying like gremlins after midnight. At one point, I spotted 7 beach balls all at once in different parts of the arena being bounced around. So you could tell why people were distracted. Then I saw somebody, and I think it was Ali, and I even got part of this on, I was filming this on video, and at the very end of my video, as I'm filming these stupid beach balls getting bounced around, you could see in the background, like, Mustafa Ali hits a reverse Frankensteiner. I'm like, holy shit, there's a good match going on here. I felt bad for those two guys. You know, he had a beautiful Spanish fly off the top rope to Neville. He went for his inverted 450, which is one of my new favorite finishers in all of wrestling. He missed, and Neville climbed up to the top. He was teasing the red arrow. He looked around. He's like, I don't think so. He jumped down, and instead he won with the Rings of Saturn for the submission. It wasn't their fault at all. They had a pretty damn good match. But you know what? WWE brought this on themselves. Because on the flight in, okay, as I'm flying to Orlando, I was watching that most recent 24 special they did on the network, which is dedicated entirely to the Monday Night Raw crowds after WrestleMania. So I watched that on the way in, and they talked about, they glorified everything. They talked about all the chants, they talked about the waves, and they specifically mentioned Beach Ball Mania. They glorified the beach balls. So I have no sympathy for the fans hijacking their show. Every time you draw attention to it, every time you glorify it, I mean, for God's sakes, Chris Jericho. This was after the beach ball shit died down on Monday. They had a Chris Jericho promo backstage, and Chris Jericho's talking about Beach Ball Mania. Now, maybe that wasn't a WWE thing. Maybe Jericho went and did that by himself in reaction to what happened earlier, but there he is. He mentions the beach balls, and all of a sudden, it started all over again. Out came the beach balls. And I'm looking at one of the security people, and he has this exasperated look on his face. It's like, dude, hey, you know, I mean, don't blame the fans, blame the company. Because now they're encouraging it. So, you know, if you encourage it, then you get what you ask for. What do you expect to happen? So if you're one of these people who is very upset about the beach balls, you know, direct some of that hate to WWE, because they bring it on themselves. Vince McMahon arrives in a stretch limousine. He's there to announce the superstar shakeup for next week. And then he mentions that, well, we have no general manager anymore because Mick Foley was fired. We don't even have a commissioner right now because my daughter Stephanie is not going to be on TV for a while. So he teases that it's time to announce a new general manager for Monday Night Raw. People get very excited. And he mentions that this new general manager was just inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. And everybody automatically assumes it's Kurt Angle, but they immediately hit Teddy Long's music. I thought this was very clever the way they did this. Out comes Teddy Long. Teddy Long, of course, spent like 8 or 9 years, I feel like, as the SmackDown general manager off and on. So Teddy's out there doing the dance, and Vince is like, Teddy, it ain't you. It's not you. And then he does the slow tease. He throws it and says, the new GM, and nobody comes out. He goes, oh, this guy might have a big head. I might have made a mistake here. He's like, the new general manager, Kurt Angle. And everybody goes nuts. Great reaction for Kurt Angle. And, you know, it was June of last year, just after they announced that they were going to be splitting the brands, almost a full year ago, that I pitched the idea of Kurt Angle as the general manager, although my original idea was Kurt Angle as the GM of SmackDown, not of Raw. And part of that was just I thought he would be a better fit for SmackDown and to have him on the same brand with American Alpha, and I could see him wrestling matches here and there, and I just love the idea of doing a 6-man tag at some point with Angle teaming with Jordan and Gable against whoever it was that they were feuding with before. But anyway, but that was my original idea going back almost a year, long before there was any talk of Kurt coming back or having any kind of discussions or any interest from WWE. I thought that him being a general manager was the absolute best scenario because it would get him back in the fold. He could, you know, if he could pass a physical and all that, he could still wrestle matches, but it would keep him out of the ring, largely, full-time, right? Because the guy can't do a full-time schedule anymore. But my thought also was that if they really want people to think that they're serious about making SmackDown must-see television again, you've got to make a big splash. And so Kurt Angle as the GM would have been one of the biggest moves that they could have made. Then, you know, fast forward a few months later, not long after they picked Mick Foley for the spot of Raw GM, and it became pretty obvious he wasn't going to last very long in that spot, and I pitched Angle as his replacement on Raw. And so here we are with Kurt Angle now as the new Raw general manager, and I've got nothing to complain about because I think this is the perfect role for him. This is exactly what they should have done. I'm very happy to see Kurt seemingly happy and healthy and back on TV. And we even got to see some comedy Kurt, goofy Kurt, with him and Enzo Amore backstage. And I hope the reaction to that came across as loud on TV as it did in the building, because people laughed their ass off at the end of that segment when Enzo and Cass walked away and Kurt's just like, "That's not how you spell soft." And I'm like, man, it's been so long since we've seen that version of Kurt Angle. I mean, serious Kurt, you know, like badass Kurt is cool and all, but I think that's my favorite incarnation of Kurt Angle was 2000, 2001. You know, like the wrestling machine who could also do the funny comedy stuff. So I'm very hopeful that we'll see more of that. We had New Day come out to issue an open challenge. And this was the debut of The Revival, Dash and Dawson, who also got a very big reaction in coming out. There were people who were very, very happy to see them. And I loved how as they come to the ring, Scott Dawson just shoves over that stupid ice cream cart. That got a big pop too. So they got a big win here in their debut match. They hit the Shatter Machine on Xavier Woods. And then after the match, when it was over, we had the Revival beating down Kofi Kingston. They went after his knee. They made it seem like Kofi now had a knee injury. I don't know if he does or not, if there's a reason why they did this. But a good night, a good first night for the Revival. They make their debut, they get a good reaction, they get a big win, and they put down one of the biggest teams on the entire show. And so you really can't ask for more than that. And so now, again, you have the Hardys on Raw, you have the Revival on Raw. I made the comment, you know, there was a draft show many years ago where Taz, who was representing SmackDown, was on commentary, and he's just like SmackDown was getting cream. Like, Raw was getting all of these people. And Taz is just like, "We need some kids! We need some kids on the show!" And I do expect that this shakeup that they're doing this week will correct this imbalance that we seem to have right now. Emma finally made her big return, finally, as Evil Emma, just as she was the last time we saw her in action. Just think of all the time they wasted in between with all that nonsense. She teamed up with Charlotte and Nia Jax against Bayley, Sasha Banks, and Dana Brooke. Finish came when Charlotte went for natural selection, but Sasha countered it into the bank statement and tapped out. Charlotte did. Not a good weekend for Charlotte. She takes the losing fall at WrestleMania. She takes the losing fall here. Even after the match, she starts shoving Emma and Nia and blaming them for the loss, and then Nia Jax slams her down. She drops a giant elbow on her. All this losing. All the more reason to think that after tomorrow night, Charlotte is going to be sporting blue instead of red. Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman came out. Heyman told a bedtime story about a superhero named Goldberg who gets his ass kicked by the Beast. I don't remember reading that story as a kid, but it sounds kind of cool. Heyman seemed to be teasing that Brock was going to defend his championship. The first ever title defense on TV when all of a sudden Braun Strowman interrupted. He went face-to-face with Lesnar. It was amazing seeing these two face-to-face because Strowman just towered over this guy. And Brock's a big dude. So they're face-to-face and the crowd is chanting yes. And Braun said that, you know, Roman Reigns may have your attention, but when I'm done with Roman, maybe you'll have my attention. Or maybe I'll have your attention. It's basically what he said. So that means we're getting another Roman Reigns-Braun Strowman match at the next pay-per-view, hopefully with a different outcome than the last time, if the idea is to build Strowman up for a match with Brock. We are clearly going to get that match at some point in the next several months. You go back to the prediction podcast I did in January at the very beginning of the year. I pitched it for SummerSlam. I would love to see them find a way somehow to hold off on doing that match until Brooklyn in August. But if they do it, let's say in June, whatever the Raw brand pay-per-view is in June, they could, you know, that's fine too. I mean, there is a long time between now and SummerSlam, and you're not going to have Brock not defend the title at least once, I would think, between now and then. So it may be Brock and Strowman in May or June, and then maybe if they do that, I don't expect Strowman to win the championship, then maybe after that you do something with Lesnar and Samoa Joe at SummerSlam, because I think that also would be a hell of a match. I wouldn't hate that. I still do like Lesnar and Strowman doing it at SummerSlam, but Lesnar and Joe, I mean, you're not going to get any complaints out of me when it comes to that. But we first have to see how this shakeup shakes out this week, because these two rosters are probably going to look very different this time next week. So Strowman backed off. He left. Brock put the title down and basically challenged him to come in, but Strowman was the cowardly heel. Jericho promo backstage with Chuck. And Jericho was attacked after the promo by Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe. They put him through a table, which took him out of the main event. The main event was supposed to be Chris Jericho and Seth Rollins against Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe. And it was pretty obvious who Seth's new partner was going to be once Jericho got taken out of the equation. And by the way, I love how the match with Triple H the night before had to be non-sanctioned. Like, Seth had to sign a hold harmless agreement just to get it. Yeah, because we were told no doctor would medically clear him in time to compete for WrestleMania. And yet here he is, 24 hours later, cleared to compete. He probably strapped a Z-Pack to his knee. Healed that thing up real quick. Sheamus and Cesaro got a win over Enzo and Big Cass to become number one contenders to the Hardys tag team titles. Sheamus and Cesaro were over big time here. In front of this crowd, I'm sure you saw them do that whole chant, you know, Sheamus and Cesaro, and they kept singing it over and over again. And, you know, Sheamus, these post-WrestleMania Raw crowds have not traditionally been kind to Sheamus. And you go back to WrestleMania 28 in Miami when Sheamus won the World Heavyweight Championship, and then the very next night he's supposed to be this babyface champion, and he comes out. I remember it. Like it was yesterday. He had an in-ring segment with Alberto Del Rio, and the people did not like Sheamus because they were very upset over what happened to Daniel Bryan being pinned in 18 seconds. And so they held it against Sheamus. So when he came out, he got booed out of the building. And then I think it was the following year in Jersey after WrestleMania 29. That was the night that I think he had his infamous match with Randy Orton, and people just crapped all over it. They just didn't care. They started a wave. They started all these chants. They chanted for Michael Cole. They chanted for JBL. It was quite the spectacle. So Sheamus has had a rough history here with these post-Mania shows. And for the first time, he was a rock star. People were actually cheering for him instead of against him. So good for him. Finn Balor was, in fact, the mystery partner for Seth Rollins. He made his big comeback here on TV. I caught Michael Cole with my phone. I caught him on video jamming at the announce desk to Balor's theme music as he came out. The video's up on my Twitter if you want to go take a look at it. I don't blame him. It is a pretty badass song, I must say. But Balor got the win here. He pinned Kevin Owens with the double foot stomp off the top rope. I thought for a brief second when that match was over and they were celebrating him and Rollins that he was going to turn on Rollins, only because it was Seth Rollins who injured Balor in the first place. Remember, he powerbombed him into the barricade at SummerSlam. He injured his arm. He put this guy out of action for 7 months. He caused Balor to miss WrestleMania. He even gloated about it the next night on television. Remember, he came out and Balor had to surrender the Universal title, and Rollins came out with that big shit-eating grin on his face. And so I thought, maybe there's a chance. Maybe there's a chance here that Balor is going to turn on this guy. But I guess time heals all wounds, not just arms. That and they need baby faces on this show. Although, I guess if you listen to my shake-up scenario earlier, I would move Balor over to SmackDown. So that was the show. When the show was over, they had Raw Talk on the network. I think this aired. Goldberg came out to do an unscripted send-off. People started chanting things. Goldberg was not amused. He basically stopped and said, "Look, this is not part of the show. This is not scripted. I'm speaking to you now from the heart." And that could go one of two ways. either the fans respect it and they pipe down and they pay attention to what you're saying, or they don't take very kindly to being told what to do and they turn on you even more. Thankfully for Goldberg, they had enough respect for him that they piped down and they paid attention to what he had to say. They even cheered him for it. They gave him an ovation. But I felt like as he was talking, I thought it was a great promo that he cut. He was clearly speaking from the heart. But he kept going on. Multiple times he had to stop and mention, I don't care if you boo me or if you cheer me. Like, he had the crowd with him. So every time he would mention that, I'm like, dude, you're just asking for it. Like, just shut up. Just shut up about it. You got the crowd with you. Just say what you have to say, or else you're going to give them a reason to turn on you. But they never did. You know, they respected him. He brought his son into the ring. He put his son up on the second rope. And it was all cute and everything until his son went and dabbed. Instant heel heat when he did that. Roman Reigns only took second place for heel heat on the show behind Goldberg's kid after he dabbed here. But I thought it was just a great promo. Again, clearly speaking from the heart, not scripted or phony or anything like that. And my sense of it is that there's no way we've seen the last of Goldberg in a WWE ring. He left it open at the end. He said, never say never. But I think, there's not even a question in my mind. He'll be back and he'll wrestle at least one more match in the future because there's too much money to be made. You know, by all accounts, this was a very successful run. I'm sure it was very successful for him. He made a shitload of money, and I'm sure the company was very happy with how things went. They designed a program here that went from November to WrestleMania. It went exactly as they wanted it to, and they got out of it what they wanted. But I still think that Goldberg has some mileage in him as a babyface. He's still very popular. He proved that he could go in there and he can do short matches without killing himself and injuring himself. That may be the biggest success story coming out of WrestleMania. This guy, 50 years old here, took 10 German suplexes from Brock Lesnar and he walked to the ring the next night feeling perfectly fine. You know? So, The Rock came back for WrestleMania the first time against John Cena and, he tore his hamstring off the bone or something, and then the next year he had three different major injuries coming out of that match with Cena. He had emergency surgery. He tore his adductor muscle off. And my God, and he's not even as old as Goldberg is. So The Rock comes back. He falls apart. Goldberg, by all accounts, he held up pretty well. So there's more money to be made. It's a matter of who his opponent would be and a matter of when, what the right time is. Do you just do another WrestleMania match next year? Do you do something with him at SummerSlam and get a big SummerSlam match out of him? There's some intriguing potential matches involving Goldberg. I assume he'd be on Raw. You could do, Goldberg and, one of the big guys like Strowman. You could do Goldberg and... Look, you could do Goldberg and Roman Reigns. Right? If all roads lead to Roman and Lesnar at WrestleMania next year, you need some opponents for Roman. He's already beaten The Undertaker. He's beaten a bunch of big names. I'm sure he would probably get put over Goldberg as well and be even more hated. It's not like WWE hasn't done that before. So there's a lot of different possibilities, I think, for opponents for him. It's a matter of when. There's not even a question in my mind. We have not seen the last of Bill Goldberg. He made a very good accounting for himself this time, and we'll see who they put him with. SmackDown Live. The Vaudevillains, I should mention this before I get into this here. The Vaudevillains are no more. It was announced this week that Simon Gotch and WWE had mutually agreed upon his release from the company. No reason was given, although there's been a lot of stories in the past about him and his attitude and him rubbing guys the wrong way. And that leaves Aiden English in a bit of a lurch. I guess he could always go back to doing the singing gimmick he had in NXT. I remember being a big fan of that back in the day. I don't know how, successful he'd be with it on the main roster now. To me, that just screams lower mid-card guy. Maybe that's all he is on that brand. I don't know if he'll go higher than that. But he's still around and they're going to have to find something for him to do. SmackDown poll on Twitter. Over 2,500 votes, 89% thumbs up, 11% thumbs down For once, Raw beat out SmackDown in the poll results. And Raw was the superior show this week. To me, it's not even a question. I mean, when you really look at this SmackDown show, there really wasn't a whole lot to it outside the debuts of Ty Dillinger and Shinsuke Nakamura, which was awesome. There was no Daniel Bryan at all WrestleMania weekend, unless they showed him on TV that we didn't see in the stadium in like a backstage segment or something. He wasn't at WrestleMania. He wasn't on SmackDown. I thought maybe it was because Birdie the Baby was on the way, but I don't think his daughter is due until the end of the month. So, you know, again, it's just speculation, but maybe it was the same reason as last year, which is that he just couldn't bring himself to be around all of it. You know, it's still too raw and still too painful for him not being able to be part of all of the events in the ring. But he was noticeably MIA on Sunday and again on Tuesday. According to a story on the CBS Sports website, it is unlikely that we will be seeing Mauro Ranallo on WWE television again. He has also removed all mentions of WWE from his Twitter bio, although he is still listed as a member of the SmackDown roster on WWE.com. WWE would only say in response to these rumors that have been going around that Mauro was under contract with them until August 12th of 2017. But they are not denying the rumors either, which is very telling. Mauro has not been on SmackDown since the March 7th episode, so it has been over a month. And at the time, it was said that he missed his flight due to bad weather. There was a big snowstorm, I think, in the Northeast. And then he didn't show up for a second straight week. They attributed it to him not feeling well. Since then, there's been no official confirmation of anything. There's just been a bunch of rumors. There's been a bunch of stories. But people close to him, who are friends with him and know him well, have all alluded to him being bullied by JBL, leading to him suffering from a pretty serious bout of depression, which he has struggled with for much of his life. And he has been very public about that and his bipolar disorder. It apparently stems from comments that JBL made on one of those Bring It to the Table episodes on the network where he ripped on Mauro for... Mauro was celebrating on Instagram the fact that he had placed first in the awards for Best Announcer in the Wrestling Observer Awards, of all things, to think that that may have been what led to this whole frickin' thing. So after he missed that first show, JBL also posted a tweet that clearly was out of character, that slammed Mauro for missing the show due to the snow, and JBL was like, well, everybody made it to SmackDown this week in spite of the snow. Everyone made it. And then he quickly deleted the tweet, the old tweet and delete, which tells you right there that he knew he shouldn't have posted that publicly. So this goes beyond him just being the heel announcer on TV to the play-by-play guy, which we've seen a gazillion times over the years. He can hide behind the I'm a heel bullshit all he wants to. This clearly went above and beyond that. And look, it's hardly a secret that JBL has been a bully to people over the years. It's suddenly coming to the forefront again. Justin Roberts talks about JBL in his new book and apparently is not very kind to him with the stories that he tells. The fact is, I really don't see how Mauro works with this guy again, even if he did come back. And there's really no other place for him. And it's a shame. You know, JBL has probably got a job for life. If he wants it. I'm sure Vince loves him. I know there's a lot of pressure right now, and it's kind of sort of bubbling up as a mainstream story. Deadspin did a story on it. I don't buy the fact that WWE is going to get rid of him or fire him or punish him or do anything. I think the guy's got a job for life. As long as he wants it, he will work there. I don't see that changing. And, you know, Mauro, my issue with this is that Mauro deserved a better... and if he truly is done there, for him to just kind of go away like this and for this to happen to him is really shitty. I know not everybody was a fan of his work on SmackDown, but I thought that he and Daniel Bryan together did an excellent job with the Cruiserweight Classic. That whole tournament was some of the best television that company has ever produced. And the two of them were a big part of that. And for those who are defending JBL and saying there's no proof that he did anything wrong... You know, right now it's all just rumors and there's no, evidence of anything. All I'll say is this. If my broadcast partner was being accused of something serious like that, especially like against, if people were siding with me and giving me sympathy for something he allegedly did to me. So I'm involved in this here. And this guy was getting raked over the coals publicly for something that he did not do. The first thing I would do is jump on social media and put that fire out before it spreads. I would tell people, hey, John's always been good to me. I can't speak for others. He's always been good to me. He has nothing to do with any of this. So please leave him alone. Leave him out of this. When the time is right, I'll let everybody know what's going on. Thank you for all of your concern. And leave it at that. The fact that JBL has sort of been left to twist in the wind here as the villain in this story, I think speaks volumes about where the truth lies in all of this. And given the other stories that people have shared about him over the years, and the reputation that he's built for himself as a bully, I don't find any of this hard to believe at all. But like I said, I mean, the guy probably has a job for life if he wants it. He's not going anywhere. But you know what you can do? You know what everybody listening to this can do? You can all tweet JBL, right? He'll block you, I'm sure. Most bullies dish it, but they can't take it. But feel free to tweet JBL and ask him, what was it like getting punched in the face by an announcer? What was it like getting punched in the face by Joey Styles on that trip to Iraq all those years ago? Or if you read Bob Holly's book, you heard the story, I'm sure, of the time that Steve Blackman, who, by the way, Steve Blackman is not somebody you want to be messing with. The time that Steve Blackman punched JBL in the face at an airport because he was being a dick. Guess what? He didn't mess with Blackman after that. Just like he didn't mess with Styles after that either. So tweet that to him each morning. Every time he wakes up in the morning, send him a tweet. So when he wakes up, just as a little reminder, you know, that you can only be a bully and a bitch to so many people before somebody knocks you on your ass. Ms. Maurice came out dressed up as John Cena and Nikki Bella. They looked pretty convincing, too. I would think if you were sitting a few sections up in the building from afar, you probably couldn't tell the difference. Crowd cheered them like baby faces. Maurice had a comically gigantic ring on her finger. It looked like one of those ring pops. I don't know if they still sell those. Miz talked like a robot. He said they were both leaving WWE, and the crowd loved that. They are gone, by the way. John Cena is out for the next few months filming some stuff, and Nikki announced that she's taking some time off to heal up. She is not retired, but I guess she did more than she probably should have coming off of neck surgery, and she's been having some problems. So as they went to leave, the camera cut to a violinist in the aisle. The same violinist who once played Nakamura to the ring on one of those NXT TakeOver shows, and the fans recognized him, and they started to lose their minds. And when he was done playing, the arena went dark, they hit Nakamura's music, and the Amway Center exploded. This guy got a rock star reaction coming down to the ring. He never said a word. Eventually, the lights came back up, and the music stopped, and he just stood there for a while, being showered by cheers and by chants of Nakamura. Holy shit chants. And then eventually they hit the music, and he left. This was so awesome. He could not have come across as more of a big deal than he did here, getting that type of reaction. This was a main event level reaction. The only negative takeaway I had from this, and I don't even know if negative is the right word, it's more of a concern. I love the debut, but it was patently obvious that they do not trust this guy to speak. He came out, he said nothing, not a word, and it's going to be tough for him. You know, I think it would have been tougher had he gone to Raw. So that's why I had always been, you know, pitching for him to go to SmackDown, and people thought I was nuts because why, you know, Raw really needs him right now. I'm like, no, first of all, SmackDown needs him, and second of all, I think SmackDown would be the better fit for him. Now, maybe this all goes out the window and he ends up moving to Raw this week on TV, but I think SmackDown is the place for him to stay. And hopefully it's not just a short-lived move. But he's on the main roster now, which means that Vince has him, right? He belongs to Vince now. And Vince is going to be hands-on with this guy. And I have to think that they know they have a big star on their hands. They have to know. I mean, he's one of the most charismatic guys in that entire company. But They are also all about talking, and they're all about long promos and telling stories. And Nakamura is not a long promo guy. He's just not. And I hope they take the Paul Heyman approach with him that Paul used in ECW, and they exploit this guy's strengths and they hide his weaknesses. Nakamura, from my view, doesn't have very many weaknesses. I think he's a very complete performer. He's a great wrestler. He's got a great look. He's got great music. He's very animated with his facial expressions and his hand movements and his mannerisms. Like, he is, in almost every sense of the word, the total package, aside from the fact that he's Japanese and doesn't speak English very well. I think in there, and he's a tall guy, but that's the thing that's missing with him. And so exploit the strengths by having him not have to talk as much as maybe the average guy would have to talk, and focus on all the other things that he's pretty much awesome at. Like I said, the mannerisms, the facial expressions, the strong style with the brutal kicks and everything. He can be a real badass. You know, he can come off as someone that you don't want to mess with, or else he'll take your head off, kind of like Asuka on NXT. If they could exploit that and focus less on the other stuff, at least until he gets better at it, which by the way, is exactly what I said they should have done with Roman Reigns when they split him away from the Shield. If they could do that with Nakamura, I think he'll be just fine. But find me an Asian star, a Japanese star, who has gone on to become a main event player in WWE in the last 10 to 15 years. You can't. Because they don't exist. And that's my fear. That's kind of like an old school way of thinking, that a guy like him won't be accepted as a top star on the main roster. I guess we're about to find out. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're right and I'm wrong. But we're about to find out. I don't think that's true. I think with the right person, people will embrace them. And I think you can make a lot of money with them, and people will accept them the way they accept Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins and John Cena and all those guys. And I hope Nakamura is the one that proves them all wrong. Ty Dillinger also made his official main roster debut. He was a surprise in the Royal Rumble match, but we never saw him again after that. Now he's officially up. He beat Curt Hawkins with the tiebreaker. He was a huge fan favorite on this show. I don't know that that's going to last for very long, but he's in the honeymoon phase right now. Look at the path that this guy's career has taken to get to this point. How could you not root for this guy? How could you not be happy for him? He ended up in developmental over a decade ago. Okay, he's been around for a while. He debuted on the ECW brand. Remember, he was Gavin Spears. He was Sean Spears before that. Then they gave him the name Gavin for some reason, so he was Gavin Spears. And then, I think it was only like 6 months later, he got released. He spent years on the indies after that, until WWE finally re-signed him. This was only about 3 or 4 years ago. They re-signed him, they put him at NXT, he's been there ever since, and now here we are in 2017, he's finally made it. And not only has he been promoted to the main roster, but he's over. He found something that works for him, and he got that kind of reaction on TV. He got the second biggest reaction of anybody on that show on Tuesday night, only behind Nakamura. That's pretty damn good. He has the entire arena throwing up their hands, chanting 10... I'm happy for him, and I think that he would be a solid addition to either Raw or SmackDown. I have no, I'm not married to him being on one brand or the other. If they want to draft him over to Raw this week, great. If they want to keep him on SmackDown, fine. He's kind of a really good utility player to have, I think, on either one of those shows. But in a lot of ways, I think his path to this point mirrors that of Tyler Breeze. Tyler Breeze spent a good 5 years, I think it was, down in developmental. He tried new things. He was Mike Dalton. He had different tag team partners. And I guess it wasn't working for him because, as the story goes, I think he was on the cusp of being released. If this latest idea that he had come up with didn't work out, that was probably going to be it for him. And that idea was the whole Tyler Breeze character. And Triple H, I know, helped him out a lot with that. And I think Triple H was the one who suggested that he does the whole selfie thing on his way down to the ring and holds the phone up, and it clicked. And he became a big star down in NXT. He was part of some main events on those TakeOver specials. I think he was part of some of the best TakeOver main events they've ever had. I think one of my favorite, if not my favorite, NXT TakeOver main events still to this day involved, I think it was Neville, Sami Zayn, I want to say Tyson Kidd and Tyler Breeze. I think it was those four. It's a great match. And I hope, for Ty Dillinger's sake, he does not just end up the way that Tyler Breeze has so far ended up, which is as a background comedy player. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Tyler Breeze should be the world heavyweight champion on SmackDown and he should be in main events with Nakamura. And I'm not even saying that, but I'm saying I saw things in Tyler Breeze that we still haven't seen from him on SmackDown. We haven't had the chance. So there's more potential for him to be doing more than he is now. But, you know, he's out there doing the Brizongo stuff. He's dressing up in drag as Nikki Bella. And yeah, it gets him TV time. That's all well and good. Dillinger, I think they have to be careful because he could end up falling into a similar type of position. He's got some of that, like, I don't know, underdog, babyface charm going for him. We saw it in NXT in his feud with Bobby Roode, which, again, he lost a lot more than he won in NXT, but he got the fans behind him. It'd be very easy to just lose every match you're in and people don't give a shit about you. That's kind of what's happened to Dolph Ziggler. But he had something where the fans stuck with him, and I don't know if it was just the 10 thing. That's why I say it'll be very interesting. He's in the honeymoon phase right now. Give it about 3 months, 4 months, 6 months. When that stuff starts to die down underneath it, is there anything there that the people are still into? Are they still Ty Dillinger fans, or do they get tired of the 10 stuff and he just becomes a background player? Because he's a good wrestler. But beyond that, is there more there, right? That'll be the question I think that'll be answered. But for now, I think it's a great success story, the fact that he's gotten to this point, and hopefully he'll have a chance to show people what he can do. I enjoyed the Dean Ambrose Baron Corbin street fight. I enjoyed it a hell of a lot more than their WrestleMania match. There really wasn't much to their WrestleMania match. Corbin got the win here with the End of Days. I thought that the championship was on the line, so I'm like, oh, okay, they put the title on it, but then I realized that it was a non-title match. I guess there's still time. If they're going to rematch them one more time at the next pay-per-view, they may well do a title change there. Naomi beat Alexa Bliss. That seemingly knocks Bliss out of the title picture right now, which makes me think she's probably on her way to Raw. They had a segment with Shane McMahon coming out to talk about the Superstar Shake-Up, and AJ Styles came out. He had a black eye, which I think is legit, from one of those punches that Shane threw at him the night before. So he got a nice mouse under the eye there. And Shane put his hand out, and the two of them shook hands. And AJ didn't attack him. He kind of teased it, but then he left. And he was mouthing, you know, you've got my respect. And I don't know if this was a babyface turn or not, but it certainly seems to be going in that direction. I've kind of said my piece on the Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt stuff. I'm over it. I'm intrigued at what this House of Horrors match is. It'd be kind of cool if they just completely went outside the box and they did a match in like a funhouse or like in the wilderness in some kind of weird complex somewhere instead of just a ring. Because I'm just bored to tears by what I'm seeing with these two right now. We had in the opening segment, they were jaw-jacking back and forth. Orton was in the ring and Bray was up on the Titantron. Then Bray beamed himself into the ring. We then got the return of Eric Rowan. And my question is this, is there anyone in history with as many anticlimactic returns as Eric Rowan? Remember 2 years ago? He was out with an injury for many months. This was during Bray's feud with Roman Reigns. And the lights went out, and when they came back on, there he was in a sheet mask. And the announcers in the most unenthusiastic monotone voice just go, "That's Eric Rowan. He's been gone for months." Here, he's out for months with an injury. He shows up, pulls Randy Orton out of the ring, and JBL's like, "It's Eric Rowan!" And then he eats an RKO in the main event. He takes the losing fall in the tag team match. It was Orton and Luke Harper against Rowan and Wyatt. And, you know, thanks for coming, Eric Rowan. It's like, poor guy. The best thing I can say about this is he did have a cool-looking, like a new cool-looking mask here on the show. But nobody cared. I just want this feud to be over. Move Luke Harper to Raw and just end this feud as quickly as possible.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT this week, this was a completely skippable show. It was mostly recaps from TakeOver Orlando, which was fine. It was a really good show. And I encourage everybody to go watch it, especially that tag team elimination match. This stuff they taped before TakeOver, the stuff they aired here on the show, I know because I was there, so I'm not really sure why I watched this twice, but I did. So you don't have to. Peyton Royce pinned Aaliyah with a perfect plex. Heavy Machinery, my new favorite act on NXT. They beat the Bollywood Boys. This was fun. They do a deal where Tucker Knight has one guy in a bear hug. He walks over to the corner. Otis, his partner, tags in. And then Tucker tosses the guy to him right into another bear hug. The finish was Otis picking up one of the Bollywood Boys for a slam. He's holding him horizontally. Tucker Knight hits the ropes. He collides from behind with his partner. And that causes Otis to fall forward and crush his opponent, and he gets the pin. I will say, as dead as the tag team divisions have been on Raw and SmackDown, or as they've felt at times in recent months, I'm very bullish when it comes to tag teams when I look at who they have in NXT. The Revival just got called up. You've got DIY waiting in the wings. Now these two guys, you've got Sanity, you've got TM61 when they come back from injury. You add those teams to the Hardys and New Day and American Alpha and the Usos and the Club and Cesaro and Sheamus. And I also think that Red Dragon is going to end up in WWE in the next probably 6 months. That's just my own belief. So you look at that and all of a sudden we could be looking at the strongest period of tag team wrestling in WWE in a very long time. Drew McIntyre wants the NXT title and he will be making his re-debut on NXT this upcoming week. Main event was Oney Lorcan against the mysterious El Vagabundo, who looked and sounded a lot like the Drifter, but with a mask on. Same guitar and everything. You wouldn't believe the reaction that this guy got live in that arena. He was more over with a mask on his face than he was without one. Lorcan said that El Vagabundo was the Drifter, and El Driftabundo attacked him before the bell. Lorcan did eventually pull the mask off to reveal the Drifter, who, as you recall, just lost a Loser Leaves NXT match to Cassius Ohno. He then got pinned, the Drifter did, after a running blockbuster by Lorcan. And so a female security guard ends up physically removing the Drifter from the ring. It looked a lot like the female security guard who stopped Rob Gronkowski from coming over the barricade at WrestleMania. So that may have been planned after all. Not much to it, really, the show this week. If you missed it, you missed nothing. None of this is really going to matter until we see how this whole superstar shakeup shakes out. We already know Nakamura and the Revival are gone from NXT. Drew McIntyre is in. Hideo Itami is back from injury, although not on TV yet. Beyond that, nothing really matters until we see what happens on Raw and SmackDown this week, because there could be some more movement with the NXT roster. Let's get to your mailbag questions. I didn't have a chance to do a mailbag in Orlando on the Roundtable show last week, so we'll do one here. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name or where you are from when you write in. Tristan in San Diego, I was wondering if you could give me a ballpark figure of what you spend on average to attend WrestleMania week. I'm planning on attending WrestleMania next year in New Orleans, and I plan on doing as much as I can. WrestleMania, TakeOver, ROH, Shimmer and Shine, WrestleCon, Wale Mania, etc. And I assume I need to start saving now. You've attended 6 so far, and I assume it would vary based on destination. What other shows you're attending and other commitments to your listeners would not have, but any advice on that as well as on visiting New Orleans specifically for WrestleMania would be greatly appreciated. I wanted to answer this here because I get a lot of questions about the cost of a WrestleMania trip. What do I normally do? How much do I pay? Have I ever done the travel packages that WWE offers? What's involved? So I thought I would just give you guys an overview and hopefully answer whatever questions you might have about it to put this to bed once and for all. I have never bought any of the travel packages that WWE offers. I've always bought my tickets individually to the events that I wanted to attend. I pay my own way on airfare. I pay my own way on hotel and tickets. I just find it's easier for me that way. That's a matter of personal preference. I also find that it's cheaper. But it really all depends on what you intend to be doing. If you look at the travel packages WWE offer this year, they have different levels. Their biggest package was just shy of $6,000. I mean, that's a lot of money. I spend a decent amount of money on this trip every year because it's really the only big vacation I take each year, which is probably why I've got 9 weeks of vacation that I've accrued from my job over the years that I still haven't used. But there's no way I would ever pay that much money for a vacation. That's just me. I just can't see myself paying $5,000 or $6,000 to go away on vacation for, you know, 5 days or whatever it is. If you have the means to do it, then more power to you. I wish I did. For that, though, for that top package, what you would have gotten ringside seats for the first 3 or 4 rows for Hall of Fame, NXT, WrestleMania, Raw, and SmackDown. You get tickets to Access as part of the package. You get hotel accommodations as part of the package. This year, because it was in Orlando, they also included tickets to Universal Studios. They gave you a tour of the Performance Center, so they added a few more perks to it. Now, next year, it'll be different because they don't have all that stuff in New Orleans. And if you look at the packages, from there, it just goes down. The next one is like $3,700, then $1,900. I think it goes all the way down to just under $1,000. And every single one of those tiers, every single one of those travel packages sold out. I mean, these packages are going to sell out, so you need to decide very early on if it's the right arrangement for you. So I would even start thinking now, if you're thinking about going to WrestleMania next year, figure out, are you going by yourself? Are you taking your family? Are you taking your kids? Are you going with a bunch of buddies? And does it economically make sense for you to do the travel package? I mean, you should probably give that some thought now. So before WrestleMania tickets even go on sale, you'll at least have that decided. That would be my first suggestion to you. I don't know when the packages usually go on sale. I know Mania tickets usually go on sale in November, around then. If you're planning on doing a lot more than just WWE events next year, I would suggest not doing the travel package. But again, that's just my personal preference. I've been very fortunate in that in years past, I've been able to swing some pretty good deals on airfare. I flew to Dallas last year, round trip from New York to Dallas for a little over $100. I mean, you may have points that you can use, you know, on your credit cards and stuff. I mean, I would tell you to get creative here because there are ways for you to save money on flights. You don't have to spend, you know, you don't have to break the bank just to fly to WrestleMania. You can get creative and find ways to save money. It helps to save on flights because hotels are what get you. Those hotels are not cheap. Now, you asked about New Orleans. We were very fortunate, you know, my group last time for WrestleMania 30, in that we were able to find a house right there in the French Quarter, right in the middle of everything at an amazing price. So if there was five of us split five ways, what I paid for my share of that house for those 4 or 5 days was the cost of like a decent hotel room for 1 or 2 nights. Like, we got really lucky. Now, apparently, things in New Orleans have changed. Anybody from the area there maybe can help shed some more light on this, but be aware, short-term rentals are banned in the French Quarter. A short-term rental, I think, is considered anything under 60 days. Now, I don't know if that's a new law or some new ordinance that they just passed, or if it was a law, like an existing law on the books that they're only now enforcing, but that's what we were told. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to stay at the same place we had last time, which we were kind of hoping we would. It's a bummer because it really was a great place. So now we're either going to end up renting a place just outside the French Quarter, or we're just going to have to bite the bullet and just go to a hotel like everybody else. But if you were thinking of renting a house, or if you were thinking of renting an apartment or something inside the French Quarter, you might want to rethink that plan, because I just don't think you're going to be able to do it this time. As far as a ballpark figure, you know, what you can expect to spend, it really depends on how much you're willing to spend on good seats and what events you want to do. Now, it sounds like you want to do everything. But it depends. Like, do you want to do everything and just sit in the cheap seats? Or do you want to go do everything and have pretty good seats? So I can't really accurately answer your question without knowing that. Anybody can buy a ticket to WrestleMania, I mean, 70,000 people, and go sit up in the nosebleeds, right? And you may spend, you know, $50 for your ticket. Or if you want a good seat, not like floor level first 10 rows or anything, because then you're going to spend big bucks. But maybe let's say like a level or two up from that, which is where we normally are, you're going to spend anywhere from $250 to $450 per ticket. In the past few years, I've spent in the middle to higher end of that range. That's my cutoff that I've given myself. I'm not willing to spend more than that, especially after this year when I had a giant column obstructing my view of the ring and I had a light shining right in my face for about three quarters of the event. I mean, I'm not going to spend, you know, $500 to watch a show on a giant screen. I mean, I'm just not going to do that. Thankfully, the show in New Orleans is indoors next year, so we're not going to have to worry about any columns blocking our view. In Miami, which is the first Mania I ever went to, it was a giant palm tree, right? Because they have those columns for those outdoor shows because they have that structure to protect the ring from rain and stuff. And so it blocks out four corners of the ring. There's just nothing you can do to avoid it. So if you want to spring for a good seat, you got to figure you're spending $300, give or take, for a WrestleMania ticket. If you want to go to Access, that's probably $40 right there. I think it used to be 35, now it's 40. Hall of Fame, you could get a decent Hall of Fame ticket for about $90, probably 90 to 110. So let's call it even and say $100. Same thing for NXT. Okay, so now we're up to what? What are we up to now? 540? That's $540 we're up to. You want a good seat to Raw? Right, that's going to be another 100. Now you're up to 640. You want to go to SmackDown, that's 740. Wale Mania is probably another $30 for general admission. If you want VIP, that's going to cost you more. I mean, we did GA this time, it was fine. I found my way into VIP anyway because I'm crafty like that, you know? Like, if there's a way, I always find a way. So I got into the VIP, even though I didn't pay for a VIP ticket. But so now let's say you do all that. Now you're up to, what is that, $770? That's about $770, I think. So you said you want to go to ROH, you want to go to Shimmer, you want to go to WrestleCon. Dude, honestly, you're looking at somewhere between $800 and $900 easily. Easily. Probably $1,000. And that's just for tickets to all the events. That's assuming you don't just buy the cheapest tickets for each event. Then you add in the cost of the flights, whatever your living arrangements are going to be, if you're going to go to a hotel, plus meals, you got to factor that in. You're looking at $1,500 easily for this trip. And there's people who spend a lot more than that. I think $1,500 is probably a conservative estimate for what you're looking to spend. And, you know, remember, the prices for those travel packages, they start at around $1,000 if you're going to go that route. You want to do all those shows, you're going to drop some serious coin that weekend. So I would definitely start saving up now. Hopefully that gives you a sense of what to expect. You want my opinion? It's totally worth it, especially if you're going with friends. I've never done a WrestleMania trip by myself. I don't think I would. I don't think I would be willing to spend that kind of money to go by myself. One of the main reasons I look forward to that trip as much as I do every year is being able to hang with my friends. And to meet all of you guys, whether I do a meetup or if I do a live podcast like we did in Dallas last year, honest to God, that's become one of the things I look forward to most about these trips, probably even more than WrestleMania itself. I met more people this year in Orlando than I ever have on one of these trips before. And not just at our meetup. I mean, we had a great turnout at the meetup that Sunday. But just in terms of all the other events and people who spotted me at Raw and pulled me aside and all that stuff, I met so many people. It was ridiculous. And every year it just gets bigger and bigger. The fact that it's going to be New Orleans next year, I had the time of my life last time. I loved it there. I can see, I have a buddy of mine who lives in New York now, but he used to live in New Orleans and he ran a bar on Bourbon Street in New Orleans for like 3.5 years. And I could see why. And also some of the nicest people you'll ever meet down there in New Orleans, based on our experience last time. So when they announced they were coming back down there, I didn't even need to know what the card was. I was already sold. All of us were like, that's it, we're there. I mean, WWE could put together the crappiest card of all time. I'm still going to be down there because it's not even about WrestleMania anymore. It's about all of the events. It's about the experience. So I would start saving up now because we're going to have a lot of fun down there next year. Hisham, I was listening to JR's most recent podcast with Dave Meltzer, and they discussed the idea of future WrestleManias as two-day events. It makes sense, since more and more people are showing up to the host city several days in advance to partake in various wrestling-related activities, not to mention how much programming WWE tries to cram into a single show. Do you think this is a good idea? I think it's a terrible idea. I don't know who pitched it. I don't know whose idea this was, if it was JR's or who. All due respect to him, I think it's a terrible idea. You're not packing a stadium with 65,000 people 2 days in a row. Not without jacking up the cost of a ticket anyway. Let's say you buy one ticket that gives you access to both days, and I don't know how they would work it, but it ain't cheap to run those stadium shows. If you're WWE, it's not inexpensive to run a stadium show, let alone the same stadium 2 days in a row. It's a massive production. It's a massive undertaking. But you're not getting that many people to come to the stadium on both days. I'm sorry. I just don't see that happening. And I personally just don't like the idea of it. I know New Japan has done this, but I just think for WWE, it's a terrible idea. There's no need for it, right? It's a solution for a problem that doesn't exist. You mentioned that they try to cram so much into a single show, to the point where now you're talking about, well, let's divide it up into 2 days. The solution is very simple. The solution is to go in the opposite direction. You don't need so many matches. Instead of having 14 matches next year, you can get that number down to 8, 9, or 10. Just keep it to a certain length. There, problem solved. Right? Make those matches must-see and charge higher ticket prices if you want to. People are going to pay. You could charge higher price. I mean, I don't want them to because that means I have to pay more. But they could do that. I mean, it's like it's the Super Bowl, right? It's 1 day. The Super Bowl is 1 day. It's one and done. I don't hear anybody in the NFL talking about how we have to have multi-day events, right? It's the biggest sporting event of the year. Look, WrestleMania is already a multi-day event. They have the Hall of Fame. They have NXT TakeOver the night before. They have Raw, they have SmackDown, not to mention Access and all the other shit that they do. That's more than enough. There's no reason for WrestleMania to be more than a day. John from Middletown, Connecticut. I just heard your WrestleMania review and was particularly in tune with your thoughts on what a big deal it is for The Undertaker to retire. Hearing you talk about his constant presence and what he meant for WWE for so long, I could not agree more. Obviously, Undertaker is going into the Hall of Fame as soon as he wants to. What if, when Taker goes in, he was the sole inductee? The first year of the Hall of Fame, Andre the Giant went in by himself. Granted, back then there was no ceremony. They could still do the live ceremony, just make the entire thing a tribute to The Undertaker. Have a series of speeches by the people who played the biggest role in his career. I would love to see Vince McMahon do the official induction, and then Undertaker gets to give a speech about his career. Would it work? Would they do it? And who would you like to see give speeches? I think it's a great idea. I really do. And I'm not convinced he's going in next year. I don't really see the need to rush it. But wherever it is, I think if anybody was deserving of a soul induction, I guess you could say Vince McMahon, but he ain't going in as long as he's alive. If anybody was deserving of a soul introduction, it's The Undertaker. And the idea of different people giving speeches, I think, is a great one. I think Kane clearly is one good choice. Shawn Michaels, Triple H, maybe even get Steve Austin in there to talk about him. And then you've got, you got Mick Foley and Vince McMahon. I don't know if you want to go with every single one of them. Maybe you want to keep it to like three or four. I like the idea of Vince being the one to do the final actual like induction before Undertaker comes out on stage. But Shawn Michaels has got to be in there. I think Kane has to be in there. I think Mick Foley has to be in there. I think those are, if nobody else, I think those are three givens because those are some of his greatest, maybe his three greatest rivals, in fact. I've gone on record before saying that I think Mankind is The Undertaker's greatest rival. And he played a key role in Foley, getting over upon his debut in WWE. I mean, people didn't just beat The Undertaker straight up the way that Mankind did when he first came in. That was a big deal for Foley when he first came in. Shawn Michaels, I mean, their feud, I mean, my God, I mean, they had the feud back in 97, and then they feuded again, and they had those great matches all those years later. And then you have Kane, who will always forever be linked to The Undertaker. Were it not for The Undertaker character, there would be no Kane, right? So I think things worked out pretty well for him. So yeah, I think if I had to limit it to three guys plus Vince, it would be Kane, Foley, and Shawn that I would have talk about him. And then let Undertaker go out there. And I don't want to see The Undertaker out there, as The Undertaker with the deep, gravelly voice, you know, talking about his creatures of the night. Like, I want to see him go out there, even if they don't call him by his real name, I want to see Mark Calloway go out there and give a speech and talk about just everything. Like, from the moment he was pitched the character to all the people he worked with and the things he saw, and tell some stories right up until the very end, and when did he know it was going to be over, and how did he want it to end. Like, I want him to go out there and talk like a human being and give one of the best speeches we've ever seen at the Hall of Fame. And give him the platform to do it, because if he's the only inductee, he can go out there. He could talk for 45 minutes if he's got enough to talk about. I think that's a great idea, and I'd like to see them do that. Michael from Lusk, Wyoming. Why do certain wrestlers get inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame under their character name and not their real name? As an example, The Godfather. But Charles Wright had other gimmicks in WWE. Is The Godfather in the Hall of Fame? I don't think he is in the Hall of Fame. Wait a minute. Is he in the Hall of Fame? I don't remember now. I should know this. Is The Godfather in the Hall of Fame? I feel like he might be. I'm not sure. But to answer your question, because what they're doing is they're inducting characters. They're not inducting people. Plus, I figure what it does, and this is the other reason, it gives them an opening to induct them a second time under a different gimmick later on. So, get ready for that Papa Shango Hall of Fame induction at some point. But, I mean, it's why they inducted Razor Ramon into the Hall of Fame and not Scott Hall. They wanted to induct Diesel. If it were up to them, Diesel and Razor would be in the Hall of Fame, not Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. The only reason Kevin Nash went in under his real name is because he insisted on it. He fought for it. But at some point, you know, they're going to induct those guys as the NWO. And when they induct them as the NWO, they'll go in as Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. Gareth from Leeds, England. Could you see a female announcer for this upcoming WWE Women's Tournament? Yes. While I was down in Orlando, I forgot to mention this, but they announced the Women's Tournament for this summer. This has been rumored for quite some time. 32 women from 17 different countries, very much like what they did with the Cruiserweight Classic. And I think that's a great idea. I think if their goal is to spin this off into a show of its own on the network, which I think it is, which is what they did with 205 Live, then it only makes sense to have at least one female commentator calling women's matches, right? Why should it just be men all the time? The thing is, they need to find the right person. So I would not want them to put a female announcer on the show who's no good just because she's female. If they don't have anybody who's good in the role, then just have two guys. You know, as long as you've got two capable people out there doing the job. But, you know, I think that Renee Young, for a time, did some announcing on NXT many years ago. And I remember thinking she was actually okay. She tended to be more on the gossipy side. But she wasn't bad. Right? Jim Ross doing the play-by-play with Renee Young as his sidekick, I think that could work. Or it could be Lita. Lita has experience doing commentary as well. I know they got rid of her from the pre-show panels, but they could always bring her back and pair her off with JR if they want to get a former women's champion in there, or Trish Stratus. I think Trish or Lita would work out well. Again, I don't know what kind of announcer they would be. But Trish or Alita or Renee Young, someone like that paired off with Jim Ross, who I get the sense, you know, JR is going to be doing specials for WWE. And so maybe they have him doing play-by-play for the women's tournament. I think that would be a great idea. This comes from Tim. We know the Wyatt-Orton feud has gone downhill. Should their last match be a casket match? This is a Wyatt-type match, and we haven't seen one since Bryan against Kane on SmackDown in 2014. That Bryan... Kane casket match was real good. I remember liking that match a lot as far as casket matches go. I don't really like the idea of guys other than Undertaker and Kane doing casket matches. I get what you're saying about Wyatt. Let's see what this House of Horrors match is first. I'd like for that to be the end of this feud, because if they do a casket match, that means it's going to continue on beyond this next pay-per-view, and I don't want to see that. Romy from Hartford, Connecticut. I remember there being rumors WWE was going to hire Melissa Santos from Lucha Underground and have her replace Ricardo Rodriguez as Alberto Del Rio's personal ring announcer. I was thinking, why not bring in Melissa Santos, but as Andrade Cien Almas' personal Spanish translator? I feel this could help Alma stand out from the others, as well as give Melissa some exposure in WWE. Somewhere down the line, they could also make Melissa Santos the ring announcer for NXT and eventually the main roster. What do you think of this? Melissa Santos is awesome. She's beautiful, but she's very talented. I like her ring announcing style. I think she's very good at it. But I also like the idea of her being paired off with Andrade. I think what you say is his translator. I like that idea. I've heard him speak English. Again, it's not strong. He can speak it, but it's obviously not his first language. But the idea that you would give you would have an excuse to pair him off with someone like her, because I look at her and she's a superstar. And Almas is very talented, but I feel like if he gets called up to the main roster, I mean, look, we may see him get called up this week. He could end up on Raw or SmackDown television in the next 48 hours as I'm sitting here recording this. And it's just going to be Andrade Cien Almas, and I don't doubt that he can go out there and have great matches, because he was having great matches before he even came to WWE. But again, how far can he go? If the language is a barrier and there isn't much more to him... I mean, we saw Del Rio. Del Rio was a very charismatic guy with I think, more of a kind of a mastering of the language than Almas has at this point. And look, I guess I can't sit here and say Del Rio wasn't successful. He won the Royal Rumble. He won the WWE title. He won the World Heavyweight Championship. But in the end, he fizzled out. People just lost interest. And he never, ever got to that level that I think they were hoping for him to be, this big Latin star, this big Latin babyface or whatever. It never happened. Now, I don't know if Almas can be that guy or not, but yeah, I like the idea of pairing him off with an attractive woman, because as a pair, I think that could be a main event level act. And it gets her exposure, like you said, on the main. The only thing I hate about it is I would hate to pull her away from Lucha Underground, because I do hate the idea, and I fall into this trap sometimes also. Like, I'll see a guy in Ring of Honor, I'm like, oh man, I would love to see him in WWE. And I find myself saying that because we instinctively think, okay, WWE is the top, it's the biggest company, and it's the company that I watch more WWE product each week than I do anything else, just because there's so much of it. And because that's where the interest is, right? That's what people want to hear me talk about. But sometimes... WWE isn't the right fit for everyone. And Melissa Santos just seems like a great fit for Lucha Underground. And part of me would hate to pull her away from that. But if she wanted to go to WWE, or if Lucha Underground was going to go away, God forbid, or if they were just going to be inactive for a long period of time, then, yeah, I would love to see her go to WWE. And I think pairing her off with Almas would be a good idea. Devin from New Jersey. If CM Punk came along during the Attitude Era, how well would he have done, and do you think he would have been as successful as he turned out to be? I think that Punk would have been a natural fit in ECW working for Paul Heyman, and I think he would have been a top star there. I think unfiltered, with those promos, he would have been champion, he would have been a top star. In WCW, I think he would have barely been mid-card. And honestly, I don't think he would have fared much better in WWE. They had so much top talent back then. And guys were just bigger than Punk, physically bigger than him. He would not have sniffed the main event in WWE back in the Attitude Era. I just don't see that at all. They would have stuck him probably like in the hardcore division or something. They probably would have eaten him alive, I'm guessing, in that locker room over the straight edge stuff. I think Punk came along at just the right time. He was edgy in a way that stood out more than it would have 20 years ago, because he was edgy at a time when the product was PG. And if he was edgy 20 years ago, well, who gives a shit, right? The whole product was edgy. Everybody, from the main eventers on down to the job squad. Everybody went out there and they were edgy and they cursed, and half-naked women running around. And so I don't... What is Punk... Verbally, he's phenomenal. I mean, he could spar verbally on the mic with anyone. But what's he really bringing to the table at that time that would make him stand out from everybody else. You had these larger-than-life stars. I mean, come on now. You know, like Stone Cold at his peak, The Rock, Undertaker, Mankind, Mr. McMahon, DX. I mean, come on. CM Punk is a main eventer. I don't see it. I don't see it. And again, I think he came along at just the right time. He was edgy at a time when not too many people were, and that helped him a lot. That endeared him to a lot of people because he was the anti-John Cena. That's why I love that feud so much. I think it worked, and they had great matches. But I think the whole Punk-Cena dynamic worked because they were the polar opposites. Cena is, you know, the quintessential company guy. He's out there, no tattoos, right? He's the goody-two-shoes guy and out there doing media, and he's a great representative and a great spokesman for the company. And he has a great message for kids and all that stuff. And Punk is out there. He's got an attitude. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He's got tattoos all over his body. And he's just the opposite in almost every single way of what John Cena was. He did not represent what John Cena represented. And he was not the company guy. He was not at all. And that's why I think their feud works so well. They say, like, opposites attract. So, no, I think Punk came along at just the right time. I think he got over the way he did because of when he came along. And there is no way that version of Punk in 98 or 99 would have been considered a main eventer in WWE with that crew that they had. I don't see it. Greg from New Orleans. The classic Hell in a Cell match at the 1998 King of the Ring between Undertaker and Mankind is at the top of many lists as the most memorable. More than once I've heard the spot where Foley was chokeslammed through the cell was unintentional, because he was not supposed to fall through. This is kind of hard for me to understand because you can clearly see the particular section that Foley fell through was fastened by zip ties. A few of them even fell next to him when he hit the canvas. Have you ever heard about that spot being botched? That's the story that Foley's always told, is that, you know, the other spots were planned and that one was not. Now, he would know better than I would. I'm not going to call Mick Foley a liar, but I never bought it. I still don't buy it. I think he's just adding to the legend of that match. It never made any sense to me. And I never even noticed the zip ties, so that's a great point. But for them to climb back up on top of the cage after what they had just done, I mean, the only way to possibly try to top it would be to put him through it, to chokeslam him through the cage or tombstone him through or something like that. I mean, what were they going to do? Were they going to slowly climb back down? It's like, that makes no sense. Plus, he didn't even chokeslam him. And people call it a chokeslam. It's not a chokeslam. He grabbed him by the throat, but he threw him backwards. It wasn't even a chokeslam. You know, it's not exactly a ton of force there. And the way they cut to a wide camera shot just as Undertaker goes to slam him, like the camera pans back so you could see Foley's body fall all the way down to the mat. Like, I don't believe for a second that that spot was planned. I just think that's a cover story to add to the legends of the match. So, yeah, I never bought that. Vineet from Mumbai, India. Why were the Rockers fired by WWF during their first run within the first 2 weeks? The AWA took them back, and within a year, WWE made another offer, and they went back. Can you explain what happened? I think there was some kind of a bar fight or an incident or something. I'm pretty sure this has been talked about, like, on DVDs and stuff by Sean before. Some kind of story about how Vince called them into his office and said, like, nice boots, they're made for walking, and then he fired them or something. So I think it was just them getting into trouble, like they were out at night and they did something they shouldn't have and they got fired for it. Simple as that. Michael from the Bronx, which do you think means more, being a multi-time world champion like John Cena and Ric Flair winning 16 titles, or holding a title for a long period of time like CM Punk? Holding the title once for a long period of time, to me, would mean more. To me, I just think that's more impressive. You know, Punk having that championship and not being beaten for it for 434 days, or Bruno Sammartino back in the day, I mean, my God, 8 years or something crazy like that as world champion, could not be beaten. Yeah, I would say that's more impressive. And finally here, Vibhav, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, from Indore, India, another listener from India. Buy or sell on the best tag team right now in all of wrestling, if you had to pick between these two, the Young Bucks or the Revival? Oh, I'm buying on the Revival. Oh, yeah. Buy on the Revival, sell on the Young Bucks. No offense to the Young Bucks. They got a good thing going, but the Revival, to me, they are the best tag team in wrestling right now. The Hardys may be the most popular, but I've come to love everything about the Revival. I just love how old school those guys are. I love their style. I love watching them work. The matches they have with DIY, just, I can't say enough good things about it. And those guys, again, to see where how far they've come in just the last couple of years, they've really just grown into a great tag team. I love everything about them, and I see, you know, fingers crossed, I see them going far on that main roster. Hopefully they don't get lost in the mix or anything, because they should be right there. Whether it's Raw, whether it's SmackDown with those top teams, they should be right there. I don't want to see them become an Ascension or, you know, a Breezango or a Vaudevillains or one of those teams. I mean, these guys are the real deal. And like I said, the Young Bucks, they've got a good thing going. I know they're working all over the place. But best tag team in wrestling, if you put me, you know, to a definitive answer right now, I'm going with the Revival. So that'll do it. We'll get back to your questions next weekend. You can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter, @solemonster. Thank you to all the new people who have who started following me over WrestleMania weekend. We picked up a lot of new followers. I know Raw this Monday night, I believe, is at the Nassau Coliseum here in New York. I will not be there. I have gotten my fill of WWE for now. I'll watch on TV, but I will not be there. But I am planning on going to an independent show on Friday night here in New York. So I mention it because if anybody lives in the area, if you're in Brooklyn, this is a show you might want to check out. FBW, Five Borough Wrestling. Looks like a pretty impressive lineup. They've got Brian Cage from Lucha Underground will be there. Joey Ryan, Mike Verna, who's a name to keep in mind. He's a star on the rise. Bull James, the former Bull Dempsey from NXT. JT Dunn. There's a bunch of different people on the show coming up on Friday night. So perhaps if you are there, I may see you there. And that's going to do it for this week. Again, I want to thank everybody who I met in Orlando, everybody who's had nice comments about all the interviews I did for Fight TV, which are archived now on our YouTube channel. So head on over there if you want to see my chat with Mean Gene Okerlund, Billy Gunn, Gail Kim, Christy Hemme, Demolition, The Headbangers, Jimmy Hart and The Mountie. I talked to a lot of people last weekend. And there's even more interviews on the Fight TV app, which is free to download if you want to check them out there. And don't forget to take advantage of the Audible offer. Get AJ Lee's new book. Let me know what you think. Audibletrial.com/Solemonster. We'll be back next week at episode 491. We'll have all the fallout from this week's Superstar Shakeup and all the other top stories. So until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you as always for your support, and we'll see you back here for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
Until next week, Gorilla Monsoon for the Drifter, saying so long, everybody.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemonster sounds off.
I'm just saying, I don't know, with New Day, you got three black guys out there. Why Francesca?
You want to call it Tyrone the Trombone?
Okay, that's racist.
Well, no, it's...
Racist, no.
I'm not racist. Go to Hulk Hogan for that. That's not me.
You know, usually the people that go, I'm not racist, yeah, those are the racists.
Solemonster sounds off. Since 2007, the Solemonster sounds off. Available at thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solemonster sound off.